Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until he takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning into a brand new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. My guest today, BYU football great, Curtis Brown. Curtis, thanks so much for taking a few minutes. I appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me.
So it's obviously fun to have you on the show. It's really hard to believe that it's been 20 years that you have been removed from your playing days at BYU. Your senior season was 20 years ago. Why don't you give Cougar fans an update on what life is like right now? What are you up to these days?
Life is crazy. Me and my wife struggled with fertility. And so after about 4 years of in vitro after in vitro, we were able to get a blessing and a miracle for my sister-in-law. She carried our triplets. So those were our firstborn. They are now 11. And then 6 months after they were born, we had a surprise. And my fourth Trey came right after them 15 months later. And so we now have 11-year-olds, a 9-year-old. And then my wife says, I don't think we're done yet. So we're currently due with our fifth in July.
Your triplets are, you said, 11 years old. Is that right?
11 years old.
Are they into sports? Is that something that you and your wife have kind of pushed them into, or is that something they've gravitated to on their own, or are they not into sports at all?
I don't know if you want to call it a push, a shove, a throw. We definitely want them to know that staying active is more important than being a YouTube star. And my wife being an athlete, myself being an athlete, it was just really important for us, for the kids, to get exposure to not even just different sports, but just different communities, different people, and learning to work together as a team and being able to find common ground. I think that was very important for us. And, part of the reason we moved back to California, I wanted my kids to get exposure to diverse cultures, diverse surroundings, diverse beliefs, so that they could truly know for themselves exactly what they believe and why they believe it.
Curtis, let's transition to BYU football. As a former running back, how much do you know about the running back room that BYU will have this upcoming season?
You know, having a chance to go out for the alumni game, I was able to catch a practice back in March. And so a little bit familiar with the running backs. Hinkley he's my guy, though. From day one, from the moment I saw a 2-second clip of him running a play in practice, I looked him up. I was like, who is this guy? And I know he's dealt with some different injuries and things like that. But, we talked in detail, and I was just like, hey, you got to be the guy, regardless of what's gone on in this past year. Like, I've always been a believer in you, and I think that you have a chance and opportunity to be something special. And it only takes 1 year. And so I'm hoping that he can stay healthy. I'm hoping that he will be able to be a vocal leader as well, because I think that's something that's kind of been missing from those huddles.
Well, and I think, the ground game struggled last season for BYU, and there's many reasons for why that happened. The O-line struggled as well, and as you well know, the run game and the offensive line, that goes hand in hand. If one of them's off, the whole thing is out of whack. How confident are you that what we saw last season was just a blip on the radar?
I definitely believe that when it comes to resilience and Kalani and what he... what his values are, I feel like the number one thing that he's great at is responding. And I think back to, what was it, 7-8 years ago when they had to wear Kalani shirts at their last games because they didn't know if he was going to be here much longer. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I'm like, it's crazy how the tables turn just so quickly. And then I think that – there's a resilience. I think they're getting familiar. I mean, it's a new conference for them. You know, Big 12, it's a big jump. When you go from being independent where you can kind of have some say in who you play, because you're now in a conference where week in and week out, you're banging with the big boys.
How much pride did you take as a former player who's part of the legacy at BYU that allowed BYU to get the invite to the Big 12? How big of a deal was that for you to see BYU jumping up into the P5 ranks?
It was incredible. It's been a long time coming. I mean, I know that that was the initial goal. And I think everything happens on the Lord's time. And now it's time to just kind of, you know, get in the Big 12 and make our presence felt. I just saw that, you know, for a women's track, they took second in the Big 12. And I think that's incredible. And so anything we can do to make our presence felt, to just say, hey, instead of us being like, oh, they're great for a private school, or they're great for a Mormon school. I mean, we want to be recognized as, you know, an elite program, regardless of where we're from or what our religious beliefs are.
All right, let's jump in the Wayback Machine, even further than your playing days at BYU. What were your earliest memories of football? Was it always football for you growing up?
So football started in, what was it, fifth grade? I had no clue. I was into a lot of random stuff. Probably ADHD in me, just a lot of random things. And I think back too with when I played football, I remember the first football jersey number I had was 56, and I was playing running back, and I would wear that jersey everywhere. I had no idea that 56 was either a center or a linebacker number. I was just thinking, this, I'm a cool running back kind of deal. And I think back to the opportunity. I don't even remember really my first year. I just remember that I got a lot more opportunities to try to get better than maybe some of my counterparts, because my second year, I was able to have a little breakout season. But it's just interesting that, you know, my best friend that lived up the street, his dad was the head coach. And if it wasn't for him having a belief in me, giving me, you know, those opportunities, who knows what would have happened. But luckily, I was able to catch on pretty quickly and start to have success. And so from fifth grade on, it was always like my primary sport. But the moment football was over, I was, you know, riding my bike or doing all kinds of other random stuff, motorcycles and things like that. So, but football's been that one go-to that I've always fallen back on and has always been the one that always brings joy.
You obviously had an incredible career in high school. At what point did you realize, not in a boastful way, but look, I'm pretty good. Like high school's not going to be the end of my football career. At what point did you realize there were going to be some opportunities for you?
I'd have to say after my sophomore year. So my sophomore year of high school, even though I went to a private school in California, it was kind of my breakout year. I had like 2,700 yards rushing. So that was most by a California athlete or sophomore athlete. And that's when I started to see letters come in from colleges. That was the year I received my first letter from BYU. I mean, probably 60 something different colleges that I received letters from. They're all, what you find out later is they're all generic letters that, you know, you just insert name here. But for me, that was when it became a big deal. And my mom's always been big on academics. And I remember my freshman year of high school, my grades were bad. Like literally, I think I had like a 2.6, and my mom was like, we're paying too much money for you to go to school. If you don't get your grades together, we're not playing football next year. And it went from that to my sophomore year saying, if you don't get your grades up, the only thing you're going to get to play is football. And so it was one of those things where she started to recognize my potential. And it was kind of like, I always felt it. But then when I heard her language change, it was kind of like, okay, I got to take this serious. And so my goal was to take that horrible grade point average I struggled with the first three semesters of my high school and get them up above a 3.0, just because I knew I needed to do better. So.
You said that you got a letter from BYU, generic as it was. You still get a letter from BYU and other schools. What did you know about BYU? You were not a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So I'm going to assume you maybe knew of BYU, but probably didn't know a whole lot about BYU. What was your reaction when the Cougars reached out to you?
Definitely shock. It's funny, too, because, I mean, – the letter that I have for them, there's a letter that they had, but then also they have like this like kind of like postcard. It shows their stadium lit up at night. And that's a selling point just in itself. When you look at a packed stadium and you think about the opportunity to play in that in front of that many fans. So that was a cool thing I remember noticed thinking about, but then the shocking thing was I was surprised that my mom had sent them a highlight tape. I was thinking like, why would you send BYU a highlight tape? I mean, I have had LDS friends growing up, but I thought to myself, like, you would actually want me to go to school there? And mom was like, I want you to go wherever you can get it paid for. And if somebody's going to love you enough to give you a scholarship, why not? And so it was definitely shock in the beginning because I was not expecting her to even have them on the radar. I was thinking, hey, let's stay with Pac-10 schools, maybe SEC. But she sent it to anybody that sent me a letter. And when they called, they caught me at the right time because Washington State had just bailed on me. And it was a very humble, dark few days. But when I got that call, it was kind of like, all right, let's refocus.
So had Washington State not pulled out of your sweepstakes, is that where you think you probably would have ended up?
I don't know. I mean, they were the first ones to set me up with a recruiting trip. And it was like 3 days before I was supposed to head out there. They called my mom and canceled. Unfortunately, my mom waited 2 days until Thursday when I was supposed to get some paperwork signed real quick. And she's like, oh, by the way, we'll talk about it when you get home. And I was like, are you kidding me? And so it was definitely frustrating. But it was just kind of, I was just anxious to get the process started. I had seen other players already receiving many offers. So for me to not have received any true offers by the end of my senior season, it was a little frustrated, a little disappointed. But, you know, when they called me, Barry Lamb called me and said, hey, we watched your highlight tape and you know what, you're in a pile of 10. And by the time we got done going through all the tapes, you were in our top three. And so to me, that was what I wanted to hear, that somebody actually wanted me for the value I brought, not because they saw stats on paper, but because they actually took the time to watch me and you know, express that they truly had interest in me.
Well, I think I speak for every BYU fan. We say we're grateful that the Cougars and Pullman decided to make that decision because the rest is history for you in Provo. Now, how did you decide that you're going to go to BYU? I'm going to assume it's a bit of a culture shock when you get here. So what were those early days at BYU like for you? Because I believe you've mentioned previously that you actually considered transferring because you didn't feel like it was the place for you. Take me through those early days as a member of the BYU football team.
So I will say this, and this is where I become CB and get candid. Having been in and out of private schools almost my whole life up till 18, it felt like, and also because my parents wanting to put us in an environment where we could thrive, I've always been the minority. I mean, there was out of 650 kids, there was only 9 black kids at our high school. So having to go to a school with religious background, religious philosophies, rules, dress codes, honor code, grooming standards, those rules, I was already used to that. African American in a white community, that was probably my entire upbringing, to the point where it didn't become this awkward, weird. I mean, it was what it was. And so for me going to BYU, I think just the biggest culture shock for me, obviously, was just like Sundays being quiet. I think, ultimately, yeah, you're trying to make a good name for yourself in the community, but you're also trying to, you know, have impact on the field. I think the biggest thing that I probably underestimated was how athletic these guys would be. I mean, it was a big shift. I don't care who you are. You can be the most confident kid in the world. When you come into college football, there's a difference. And you get used to the physicality. You have to get used to the work ethic of those around you. You're now a normal fish. I wouldn't say you're now a small fish, because I think at the end of the day, if you're getting a scholarship to come play college football, you deserve to be in that room with those men. But I think you're just learning kind of what your new standard has to be. So, and I was grateful that I was able to rise to the occasion.
Well, when you came to BYU, you were not a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but there was a time that changed, and we will talk about that right after this break. This is the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Welcome back. This is the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. My name is Jason Shepherd. Happy to have Curtis Brown as our guest today. And before the break, talking about the fact that you were a non-member when you committed to BYU and you arrived on campus. But there was a moment where that switch got flipped in your head. Take me through what led up to you being interested in investigating the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
So the thing I would say that really sparked my interest in the church was my redshirt year was one of those. It was a tough year for me because I went from playing to being kind of this nobody. I felt like, I mean, you're waking up super early to do workouts. You're with the scout team. You're getting beat up day in and day out in practice, and you just don't know. You're not even really attached to the offense. You know, we're in the meetings, but at the end of the day, it's like once we went out to practice, we were kind of like, hey, you hang out with the defense all day, and then obviously you're watching the game from the stands. And so for me, that year was just kind of like a, I don't know if it was kind of just like this depressing, just like what's going on? This doesn't feel right. You being a little bit of homesick. And my mom had mentioned to me early on in the season, was like, hey, have you had a chance to go to church anywhere? And I was like, Mom, there's only like Mormon churches around here. And she was like, that's okay. And that conversation kind of stuck with me. I was like, oh, I guess it really isn't that big of a deal. And so I think it was probably like 5 or 6 games into the season. And I was just like, hey, Matt, he was our quarterback at the time, Matt Berry. Like, hey, when are we going to go to church? And he joked, I do it anytime. And I was like, no, I really want to go. And George Curtis, who amazing trainer, he had always kind of joked with me, just you know, like, you know what, you'd make a great LDS kid. You know, all we got to do is add water. And I'm like, I was thinking more metaphors, like water, like a plant, like I'm a great seed and you water me and I'll grow. I really didn't catch on to the whole baptism thing. And so it was one of those where having George that it was always constantly reminding me that I would be a great, you know, great example and make a great member. My mom throwing out the idea of just going to church, happening, being around Matt and him just being open, like, sure, come with me. I was like, kind of those all kind of played a factor in at least just my curiosity. And I'll tell you, I'll be completely transparent. Like, I was just planning on going to church. I had no desire at that time to get baptized. But I will say missionaries are very sneaky. And I didn't ask very many questions, but they were just like, hey, we have a date coming up. And so I was thinking that like I had to hit a deadline. And so for me, I was like, well, I better learn all this stuff before the deadline because I have to make a decision. So they asked me to commit. I mean, they're some great salesmen actually to get me to commit. And their only ask of me was like, hey, just pray if you know to know it's true. Here's a date we have coming up. Pray to know it's true. And so that forced me to kind of really think about everything that was going on. And even after I made the decision or commitment to get baptized, I didn't want to share it with anybody. Because my biggest fear was like, the moment I get baptized, if I hear something wonky or something crazy, and all of a sudden the curtains pulled back and I'm like, nah, I'm not for this. I didn't want the embarrassment, not the embarrassment, but have to explain to everybody why I decided to just move away from it. And so I think that was more of a struggle making it public than anything else.
Now looking back on that decision, can you even describe what that decision has meant to you in your life today?
Jason, that's an incredible question you asked, because I feel like every year the answer gets deeper and stronger, and the conviction gets stronger. You know, I would say that it's always like, oh, well, this experience changed my life. Like, I would say that this experience gave me life. I think I look back and all the principles and things that, like, I think my parents, you know, worked hard to instill in me and who I am as a person, and loving myself and caring for myself and serving others and being a good person in the community. You know, those great principles and you know, thought process was like, hey, this is what we want you to be. And then with the conversion, it was kind of like, this, it's not just you, it's anybody that is a part of our church. This is the culture, and this is the family, and this is what we want everyone that is aligned with us to represent. And for me, to not have to be the minority anymore, to be in a majority where everybody's on the same page, striving for the same things, same values, same principles. And yeah, we're not all perfect. But I think once people get out of their own way and realize that it's not about being perfect, it's about understanding where perfection is and where you lie and which direction you're going, up or down. And to me, that's what religion is in general. It's a North Star, and it forces you to think, where am I at? Because if you're not moving, you're going backwards. And that's what BYU was for me. And I look at my family, I look at all the blessings from a career, football. I'll tell you right now, I don't know where I'd be without the church, because football plays some games with you mentally, especially at the NFL level. And I think, you know, the reason why I'm not in the NFL today, aside from an ankle injury, is for the sanity of my mental health, because I know that road would have taken me down a dark path had I not had the gospel as a foundation.
You know, when you joined the team, you came in 2002, and obviously the 2001 season is one of those years that every BYU fan looks back as one of the greatest years that BYU's had, and that team was just unbelievable. But when you come in 2002, and you've touched on it a couple of times, this team was kind of going through a transition to what it would ultimately become. How did you, and you were just talking about, you know, dealing with your mental health and trying to stay positive and those things. During that time where you're coming off a great year in 2001, and then when you join it, things aren't as good as they were in 2001. How did you deal with that part of things as the program was transitioning, which ultimately to Bronco Mendenhall? But that time was, I've talked to a lot of players who were part of BYU football at that time. They say it was just a really strange time to go through. What was that like for you?
So what's funny is that, like, my freshman year, I didn't know what to expect. And not growing up as a huge BYU fan, or even knowing BYU was even in Provo, or not knowing that landscape, I was just excited just to be dressing, suiting up for games, being with teammates, being on TV. Like, to me, I was just taking it all in. I remember specifically being at the University of Utah, our last game, and I think both of us were horrible at the time, and I don't even think either of us were going to a bowl game. Maybe they were, though. And I remember just hearing the fans boo and talk all this stuff, and I'm like, they must not really like us at all. This is bad. Like, you're just hearing it, and like, you don't even really, like, it didn't even, like, register, like, okay, you guys don't like each other. But I didn't even take offense to it. And then my sophomore year, my redshirt sophomore year, so I redshirted. Same thing. We lost 3-0 at Lavelle Edwards Stadium, and that was Urban Meyer's first year there. And even that game, I'm just like, we lost 3. Like, you're just frustrated, but it was kind of like, whatever. And then my sophomore year, that's when I kind of got a little nasty taste in my mouth. That was the year they went to the Fiesta Bowl with Alex Smith. And there was some crap talking. There was some stuff going on in the media and things like that. And I'm just kind of like, all right, kind of lit a fire under my belly. They took some personal shots at me. And that's when I was kind of like, okay, now. And then obviously being a member now It was more of, okay, this is my school. This is my church. You know, you can make comments about anything you want in regards to the skill level, but when you start talking about my teammates and what they're believing and family and stuff like that, that's when it became personal. And so, no, it definitely stunk, but I think everything happens for a reason. I think it builds character. I think you look at our senior group and what we had to battle through so that Max Hall and Austin Colley and Dennis Pittick could have that 5 years of just amazingness. Like, you know what? I would gladly sacrifice again on the behalf of them, and, you know, so that they could have the experience they have, because yeah, it sucked.
Wasn't your first career start the game at Utah State?
That was my first start.
What? Yes. What an first of all, for those, I'm going to assume most BYU fans of a certain age certainly know what that game was, but that was the game up in Logan. You're down by 27 points at half, but then you come back and you win 35-34. For that to be your first start, can you explain, first of all, what it was like to get your first start, but then to have that game play out like that?
What's funny is, like, I don't think anyone saw it coming, not even myself. And I think when we went into the game, obviously, there was this dependence on, let's try to air it out. Let's try to, you know, we've been struggling, and we were thinking, hey, I think Coach Cronin in the beginning was like, I got to prove everybody right. Why, you know, I decided to go with Ingerman. And it was just, I think we got to a point where, like, nothing else is working. And we had some decent runs in the first half, but we were going to primarily pass. And so, I don't know. I just, my thought was just take advantage of what they're giving us. The cool thing about it was two of my high school teammates were playing for Utah State at the time, my quarterback and one of my linebackers. And I remember Robert Watts, on one of the first carries I had up the middle, he put me on my back and the whole stadium roared. And I was just like, okay, yeah, I remember what that used to feel like in high school. But no, I think you just react. You just ultimately, it's like, hey, this is your time to shine, go make it happen. And that's what I did. I just went hard and things ended up working out.
You mentioned Coach Croton a minute ago, and he was the coach at BYU when you came to Provo, and he was there for a large part of your career at BYU. But in 2005, the administration decides to make a change at the head coaching position, and the job goes to Bronco Mendenhall. What was that transition like to be a part of?
I will say the one cool thing about having Bronco become our next head coach was I was able to establish a relationship with him my redshirt year. Being a scout team guy, I'm a competitor, and it sucks playing scout team. And it sucks for our offensive line because, let's face it, these guys, they're either return missionaries or they're younger freshman guys, and they're going against our first team D. And our first team D was just like, I mean – I know the Coach Mendenhall we probably see today, but the Mendenhall we had his first couple years was fresh out of New Mexico. And I mean, I'll tell you, like, he wanted his guys to have attitude. He wanted them to have a chip on their shoulder. And so I think just understanding those expectations, some bought in, some didn't, but it set me up for success just because I wanted to go in there and just be hungry and forget about myself.
Well, and everything sort of aligned in that 2006 season. That is a season that BYU fans will always remember fondly, and there's certainly one play specifically that BYU fans will always remember about the 2006 season. But I want to know, because obviously you have John Beck, you, Johnny Harlene. Did you guys know going into that year, like, this could be a pretty good year for us? Did you have that feeling? And at what point, if you didn't, was there a point in the year where it kind of clicked and you're like, okay, yeah, this could be something special?
I think we go into every single season thinking we're going to be something special. And that's the quick thing you learn in college, just like you saw with Colorado this year. You only know what's going on in your locker room. You only know what's going on in your stadium and your practices. You really don't have a clue what's going on everywhere else in regards to who's getting better. I mean, I remember, my sophomore year, we're playing against Utah, or maybe it was something, it was our junior year. Yeah, we're playing against Utah, and their starting quarterback, Brian Johnson, gets injured. And so we're like, okay, cool. They're starting, like, we have a chance to win. And then Brett Ratliff comes in here and just kills it. And you're just like, who the heck is this dude? He only has one start, and he just dominated us. And so that's the thing, is that, like, every team is getting better. And I think one of the things that Coach Minhall instilled in us is just, like, one more play. It's going to come down to one more play, one key. And so when you talk about what was that defining moment my senior year, it was going to be the TCU game. They had a bye week before they played us. Plus, it was a Thursday night game. So we had a game on Saturday. We had to turn around and play a Thursday night game on ESPN. They're ranked. I think we were ranked at the time just because a couple wins, and they're ranked 14 or something like that. And we had to play them away. And so one of the things that it was like, it was a physical game. It was about just taking advantage of opportunities. And that was one where it was like, no, it's going to be a grind. They're going to make us drive the whole length of the field. We're not going to get these 80-yard touchdown passes. And it was four quarters of just grinding it out and just taking it play by play. And once we won that game, I was like, okay, this is our time.
I want to ask you about two specific plays that season. And the first one actually ended up being ranked one of the greatest plays in BYU football history, and it was your run against Tulsa. What do you remember about that run? Take us through that play.
I just remember thinking that, hey, we got to get a first down. I'm thinking the linebacker that they had been putting on me was a bigger guy, and he was a guy that I felt like I could get away from on this option route. And so I remember releasing up the middle and just thinking, you know what? I just need to get a first down. Like, get John and throw me the ball more, get a first down. And so I caught it, start running to, you know, run into the right side of the field. And obviously, I feel like the one thing I really loved about my running game was ability to set my players up to make good blocks. And I remember seeing Matt Allen blocking his guy on the sideline. And I'm just kind of like maneuvering and making Matt be able to stay on his block as long as possible. And so when I ran by him, the guy was being blocked. And so he wasn't able to tackle me with one hand. And I think the safety ended up sprinting over, trying to hit me. And I think he was just trying to do this, hey, I'm not going to wrap you up. I'm going to try to do the power move. But he, you know, thankfully I'd been a workhorse in the gym. And so I wasn't going to allow him just to knock me over. And then one more came and I just, you know, stiff arm, but like, it was incredible. I don't think you ever think. You're just kind of like, wait, I'm still running. I'm still on my feet. Like, it just ended up working out. And to me, it was probably one of the most emotional physical runs that I've ever had. And just to run into the end zone and this, like, I was like, wow, that I knew instantly that was a big one.
All right. The other one I want to ask you about was against New Mexico. And I believe that was senior day when you faced the Lobos.
Yes.
But I want to ask you, obviously, about the record breaker where you have the long run for the touchdown that broke Jamal Willis's record. Yes. What did that mean to you to be in that position to be able to do that?
It was a relief. That's all that got talked about in the media. Like, you're this many yards away, you break it. And the toughest thing for me was like my success and my ability to have success throughout my career was based on the fact that like I didn't focus on personal goals. I didn't set the goal, hey, I'm going to have 1,000-yard rushing or I'm going to have this many yards catching, you know, receiving. So for me, there was a lot of pressure because that week leading up into that New Mexico game, it was like, are you going to break the record this week? Are you going to break it next week? And I'm like, I didn't want to talk about it. But I remember right before the game started, Jake Caressa, my roommate at the time, he's like, dude, you get the first series to break the record. And you better not break it on like some little rinky-dink two or three-yard run. Like, if you're going to break the record, you need to break it in style kind of deal. And so they called the play, and it was a fly motion. And I knew that the safety was going to jump on the receiver doing the fly motion. And that meant I just had to make the linebacker miss, and I ran down the middle. Sure enough, the safety went flying downhill thinking he was going to blow up the receiver, and it left it wide open. And I was like, I better not trip, stumble on some grass. I didn't think I was going to get caught from behind, but I was just like, something's going to happen where like I just trip or get a cramp. But unfortunately, or fortunately for me, I was able to make it to the end zone, and it was kind of like, okay, it's all over. Now we can just go play.
All right, so I lied. I said I was going to ask you about two plays. I'm going to ask you about three because I've got to ask you about Becta Harlene. I mean, it's honestly one of the greatest plays ever in BYU history. I know I was on the sideline on the BYU side for that. So I know how I felt inside. I want to know how you felt when that play was building up and then ultimately with the outcome.
There was a lot of nerves. There was a lot of, oh crud, this is going to be horrible with media. Cause I was very confident in BYU leading up into that week. I remember specifically saying, you know, if we play the way we've been playing all year in Utah, they weren't having a great year. If they play the way I specifically said, it should be a blowout. And that was just based on how we've been playing the game. We've been scoring 40-something points a game, which our offense was just rolling. And we beat TCU, and it's like, here's a University of Utah team that hadn't been having a whole bunch of success. And even though they're a rival, I'm thinking, you know what, if we just play within ourselves, it should be a blowout. Well, media has a way of doing that. I remember seeing that on TV, and it's like they just kept on repeating it, blowout, blowout, blowout. And I'm like, so I knew they're amped up. And so with, you know, 2 minutes left, I think it was either minute 17, I think maybe it was minute 17 left in the game, you know, I get the kickoff return, and I'm thinking like, dude, we need to get a good return. I think we only get into like the 22-yard line, but it was one of those things where it's like, we've run this 2-minute offense, let's get out of bounds. So there's a couple of times where I caught the ball where it was like, hey, you run, get the first down, get out of bounds kind of deal. But I remember that last play and I'm like, just thinking to myself, like, I'm already preparing my apologies. Like, I know I was talking crap, but he was like, I was confident, whatever. It's just all those different things are running through your head. And I remember running to the end zone for the play and just wondering what's going to happen. I was covered up by like two or three dudes. That's probably why Johnny was open. But then John throws it. I see him go to the ground and I just hear the crowd like roar. And I'm like, shoot, we just lost. I didn't even see where the ball landed. And then all of a sudden I remember seeing Brett Cooper on our team and he like chucked his helmet like 50 feet up in the air. I just remember seeing him run on the field. And I'm like, either we're fighting with the team right now or we just won. And so when I saw that it was our fans that had created that much noise in that stadium, when I'd seen our team just start running out on the field, I was like, we did it. And I was 0-4 against Utah. If I include the year I redshirted, we lost 4 straight to them. And it was not pretty. It was not fun. And so, you know, in the year before that, that junior year was like a shootout. I think, what was it, 50? The score, we just went back and forth and ended up losing. But it's funny how you can erase 4 horrible losses with just 1 sweet victory. And I feel like we had gone undefeated my whole time there just based on that 1 win.
It's funny. Maybe other people had heard you tell that story. I did not know that you could not see the outcome of the play. That I think that's interesting that you were there, but you were kind of reacting to other people's reaction, not the actual catch.
No, look back on the play. I'm in the far right end zone, just standing there, and I'm trying to like get myself super small because John has a freaking arm. And I'm like, if he throws a 99 mile an hour fast football, I can catch it and be protected. And like, yeah, you just see him scrambling and I'm just kind of like, what's going on? And literally I'm just like, it was a blur. It was kind of like, you just hear, cause that's the first thing you hear is the crowd. And so immediately you're like, crap. And then I see our guys running. I'm like, this is unbelievable. So even at that moment, I'm kind of still in shock, like waiting for the flag to get thrown, waiting for there to be a challenge. And I even look at Johnny. I know how turf works, but like Johnny slid on his knees for about 3 or 4 yards. And certain turfs, if he would have slid, he probably could have fallen, you know, stopped dead in his tracks. Or if he slides a little bit further, he catches the ball outside the end zone. And so where he caught it and just how it all worked out, like it's still a miracle for me, honestly. I think somebody was looking out for me and was like, you know what, Today, you don't have to apologize, Curtis. You can just,
yeah. Hey, I've said this many, many times over the years. It is one of the greatest sports moments of my life. It's one of those moments I will never forget as long as I live. And it's obviously a great way to end the regular season. But then you guys end up going to the Las Vegas Bowl and you absolutely destroy the Oregon Ducks. And I believe that was BYU's first bowl win in about a decade. So things are going pretty well. And then it's time for you to start shifting towards looking at the pros. You ultimately go undrafted, but you do get an opportunity in the league. Take me through that process and what that was like for you.
Well, you know, the thing I learned really quick was NFL stands for not for long. As you even see today with in regards to how running backs are treated in regards to their contracts and long term. And it was almost like this jinx, like the moment you give a running back money, you know, big contract, they end up having a season ending injury. And so I knew that out of all the positions, my position was the most short lived going into it. I think on average running backs for like 2.3 years. And in my head, I'm like, I just want to do a couple years. Like I literally thought to myself, like, I don't need to be a star. I just want to be a backup for a couple years. So I go undrafted. I essentially had to do a work. I got invited to Cleveland Browns minicamp. And while I'm in camp for a weekend, the running backs coach talks about how he loves, you know, East Coast offense versus the West Coast offense and how there's no real power running. And I'm like, am I the only person part of a West Coast offense in this?
You're like,
room?
Things because, do not sound good for me right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, this does not sound good. And I felt like I had a good camp, but they end up signing a fullback from Michigan. I don't even know if it was their first string or second string fullback. And I was kind of like, this is crazy. Okay. And then so sat at home for another 10 days. And then Oakland said, hey, we want to give you a workout. So went and did a workout for them. Which actually ended up being, a long day because I was supposed to do a workout for them. The workout got pushed back. And then, so I finally did the workout and they're like, okay, we're going to sign you. And I spent 2 months with him and you start to see the writing on the wall. I was getting a lot of reps, but the reason was there were two running backs that had, you know, surgeries post season and they were recovering. So it was me and Dominique Rhodes who had just come in from the Colts. And we were kind of running the primary running back one and two. And then after about a month, Lamont Jordan was healthy. And Justin Fargus was still practicing with us a little bit. And you start to see, okay, there. And then also, I'm blanking on his name right now, Mike. He was a big old running back out of Louisville. And so it was one of those things where like guys were still healing and things like that. And so when I got cut 4th of July weekend, it was like, oh, they're just kind of using me as a body until to get through practices or whatever. So that was the longest stint I'd been at home. I actually went and interviewed for a few different jobs. I got a job at I got a job that I was supposed to start that Monday at Milgard Windows, being a delivery truck driver or delivery truck driver. Yeah. And Cincinnati said, hey, we want to sign you. One of our guys just dislocated his elbow. And so I was like, all right. So I called Milgard and said, hey, sorry, I got it.
The NFL's calling. I'm not going to be able to deliver your windows.
Yeah. So wasn't able to start that, but then went to Cincinnati and, you know, I signed with him on a Tuesday and on a Thursday, I'm playing my first preseason game, first carry. It ended up getting called back, but I go in for a 4-yard touchdown. But then it got called holding on the backside. And I'm just like, this is crazy. Like my first carry ever in that same game, their number two, their second round draft pick towards ACL, Kenny Irons. And so it was one of those things where I'm like, wait, this might work out. And then special teams happen.
Yeah.
And I would tell you, that's the number one thing. That's the biggest piece of feedback I'll give anybody. And I think obviously, it's well understood now. You don't make the NFL if you're not good at special teams. And when I was at BYU, that wasn't a priority. We were thin on the offensive side of the ball. So they weren't anxious to put starters as special teams people. And where I started to notice it was like teams like USC had their starting linebackers and guys playing special teams. And you started to see that transition at BYU where it's like, you know what? Yeah, we don't have the depth, but we also don't have a lot of guys going into the next level. And I would say that was the biggest contributor, was that we couldn't produce a lot of special teams. And so for me, I had two personal fouls in back-to-back games. I got fined $5,000. $5,000. I didn't even make $5,000 in
preseason. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
And so for me, it was one of those things where it kicked my butt, and I was like, dude, this is going to be rough. And so, like I said, everything happened for a reason, but it was definitely a tough pill to swallow. But looking back now that I'm 40, I'm like, okay, it was a blessing in disguise, because either way, that would have been a rough road. Make it on a team, you know, week to week, you don't know if you're going to get cut or not. My wife is still finishing up school. Is she going to live with me? Is she going to be separate? Like, it's a tough road. But my goal right now is, as I raise my kids, is that no matter what they want to do, is understand what that expectation is going to be, and hopefully build enough mental strength in them to say, you know what, make the decision on your own. Like, be able to say, you know what, this is a career I want to pursue or not, and be happy with it, and not live with regrets.
Well, Curtis, I want to thank you so much for doing this. Like I mentioned to you, I covered your entire career. You were a joy to watch on the field, and it's been an absolute pleasure to spend this time with you. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
No, Jason, thank you. Appreciate you having me on.
All right. Thanks once again to my guest, Curtis Brown. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms, or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.